This is the Get Healthy 360 podcast, where we discuss topics related to your physical, mental, psychological, and spiritual health. Your host is Dr. Chris Ferguson, board certified in anesthesiology and pain management. This podcast is for informational purposes only, and you should consult your primary healthcare provider before making any decisions related to your health. And here's your host, Dr. Chris Ferguson. Oh, one more thing before we start. If you like this episode, please consider rating us 5 stars. We would really appreciate it. Thanks very much.
We have with us Dr. Crystal Beal. She is a board certified family practice doctor that specializes in, and the term that she would prefer me to use is queer issues. How would you describe your practice, Dr. Beal?
Basically, you did a pretty good job. So I do queer and gender affirming care.
Great. So what we're going to talk about today is, here's the small itinerary. So we're going to talk about the terms because these are confusing for me. So Dr. Beal is going to educate us about the terms, how to use the terms, what all these things mean, some of the discrimination, or a lot of discrimination actually, that people see when they see a physician or healthcare provider. And she'll discuss a little bit of queer culture and things you should know. So Dr. Beal, thank you very much for taking the time.
Thank you so much for having me, Chris. And I would love it if you called me Crystal.
Crystal, great. So we were chatting offline and there are a lot of terms, and it kind of reminded me of organic chemistry class because it's complicated. So can you clear? So let's start with LGBTQT. What does that stand for and what do those terms mean?
So the LGBTQ, and then there's actually a whole bunch of other letters that can
there's go more letters.
AAI2F can be tacked into that phrase.
Okay, so clarify what that acronym stands for.
So it's an acronym that's trying to include basically everyone within the community that, and everyone in our population who doesn't necessarily identify as cisgender or straight.
Okay, so can you clarify what all those letters mean in that acronym?
Yeah.
The long acronym, not the short acronym.
Yeah, I can. And actually, you know, one of the ways I've heard it said that's easier to remember is quilt bag. That kind of includes all of the letters in a way that spells a word, so it's a little easier to remember.
Quilt bag.
Yeah.
Okay.
But so the L stands for lesbian.
Okay. Okay. So lesbian, what does that term mean?
So lesbian typically is going to refer to someone who identifies as a woman who is sexually and romantically attracted to other people who identify as women.
Okay. And what's the next letter?
G for gay.
And that means?
Typically, it's going to be someone who identifies that as a man and is sexually and romantically attracted to other people who identify as men.
Okay.
They typically, both of those are kind of exclusive, right? So there are men who have sex only with other men.
Okay.
And women who have sex only with other women. They're not necessarily the next letter, which would be B, which is bisexual, are people, my favorite way to describe bisexual is people who are attracted to people of both their gender and other genders.
Okay.
The T stands for trans.
And that means?
So historically, it has meant a person whose gender identity does not align with those typically associated with the sexual organs they were born with.
Okay.
And then it has come to mean over the past decade or so, a more umbrella term for anyone whose gender is not cisgender.
Okay, so what does that term cis mean?
Yeah, so cisgender is a term used to describe a person whose gender identity aligns with those typically associated with the sex assigned to them at birth or with the reproductive organs they were born with. And then the Q can be used for a couple of different words, and sometimes people will say QQ. And so it can be questioning.
Okay, what does that mean?
So it can be someone questioning their gender identity or their sexual orientation.
Okay, so QQ means Q queer. So they're questioning their queerness?
Oh, so one Q just means questioning and one means queer.
Wait, what? Say that again.
So the acronym is LGBTQQ.
So Q for queer, and then the other Q in the acronym means questioning.
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And
got
then
it.
With the LGBTQQAAI, so asexual, agender are the two A's.
Okay, wait. So asexual meaning what?
So typically meaning they're not sexually interested or attracted to other anythings.
Okay, so they're just, they become like a monk.
Yeah, I guess so, but like not.
But it's not with no religious connotations. They're just not.
Yeah, with no religious connotation. Yeah, it's typically, it's just people, you know, and I think as physicians, we we sometimes like have these people as patients and maybe they don't have a word to describe it, but you know, there's someone who is just like, they might want a romantic relationship or like a really close, intimate friendship. They might want a life partner. They just don't want to have sex with them. Like, sex isn't a thing that's interesting to them.
Okay. So that's the first day. What about this? The next?
Agender.
Okay. What does that mean?
So again, just a person who does not have a gender. So they're not male, they're not female, they're not non-binary or trans. They just don't have a gender.
Okay. And you were, okay. And what's the last letter?
I is okay. Intersex.
And that means what?
So, you know, this is a term that means a lot of different things, but it has more of a medical definition, right? It's people who have genes and hormones and reproductive organs that all kind of don't match in the way that we tend to think of those things matching necessarily. I'm probably not describing that very well.
So how is that different than transgender?
Oh, it's super different, right? So typically transgender, you know, again, specifically historically has meant this concept of my gender, what I feel in my brain and in my heart as my gender do not match up with the reproductive organs and genitals I was born with, right? And mm-hmm. so historically, it really has been pretty, experience of trans a lot of times has been someone going from one side of the binary to the other. So from male to female. As gender has become more discussed and more a conversation and people have more capacity to explore it and express it and name it, this concept of trans being an umbrella term that includes people who have more diverse gender identities has opened up that kind of basket quite a bit. Intersex is still different from that, right? Because it actually, those are all those conditions we studied in medical school where like you have another term for it is disorders of sexual development. That's actually the medical term we use now. So that's where you have like potential genes turned off. So you're, you know, you might have like a XY chromosome, but some of your genes are turned off on your Y chromosome. So you actually continue to develop more reproductive organs that appear more congruent with ovaries and you know, all of those conditions we study. It's actually another...
There's more terms. Okay, what are the more terms?
The last little bit of the acronym is a two, like the number two, F, which stands for two-spirit.
Oh, good Lord. Okay, what does 2F mean?
2S. S as in
Sam.
Smokey. Sam, yeah. So two-spirit. It's a term that's actually probably originated within indigenous cultures and is very prior to colonization in the Americas. Kind of the First Nations people of North America and like Alaska Natives up in Alaska. Often people in their culture didn't necessarily believe that they had, you know, just male or just female gender. They felt like they might have some of both. And oftentimes these were people who were revered within the community and the culture and sought after for wisdom and advice and spiritual guidance. But after colonization, you know, they were considered abnormal and that was pretty suppressed. So there has been a movement within these cultures to start reclaiming that term and that experience.
And wait, what was the term again?
Two-spirit.
Okay, so the two-spirit term for day-to-day use, what would someone say, I have these traits that would make me a two-spirit person?
I think it really, again, more common among indigenous culture and people feeling both masculine traits and feminine traits. So they feel like they have traits from both.
But what isn't that most people? Like most people are going to have masculine and feminine traits just to differing degrees.
Right, Chris? We're all queer. I don't know why we don't call everyone queer.
Well, less terms would definitely be better. I do pain management. So in my world, it's either you have pain or you don't have pain. It's a lot easier than the very long list of terms, which is good that people are getting terms to really identify what they have.
Yeah.
And, a lot of terms.
And I will say there are like so many more terms out there.
There are more terms?
Yes. And we're not going to go into them.
No, you can tell me. I want to know the terms. How many more terms could they, I'm really curious. What terms do they have?
I honestly couldn't even tell you all of them. I will say, you know, this is the focus of my practice. I am both personally queer and professionally. I work, you know, with the queer and gender.
But you don't even know all the terms.
And I don't even know all the terms. My partner and I were like Googling things the other night and they found a term and we were like, they found actually multiple terms that we had never heard of. And we were like trying to read all about them. And I was like, wow, I had no idea. So I think Google is a great ally.
For everything. Most things. Yes. Unless you want to protect your data.
Well, then no. Yeah, then you're screwed.
That's everyone. All right. So as far as, we've covered a lot of terms. Unless there are any terms, are we missing any terms that you think are relevant? Common terms that you think people should know.
Well, we didn't define straight.
Oh, thank you. All right. So define straight.
So, right. That speaks to a sexual orientation, not a gender identity. And it's people who are attracted to people of a sex that's not the same as theirs.
So, and then you were offline, we were discussing. So you were saying that someone's physical gender and then who they're attracted to are not linked. They're independent variables.
Yeah. You know, within the queer health community, we love to refer a lot of times to something called the gender unicorn. It was created by a trans student, and it talks about actually kind of five different domains of gender identity. So there's like these five domains. Gender identity, a lot of times, is thought of as how we think of ourselves, right? So it kind of happens more in our brain, right? Gender expression is how we kind of present gender to our culture. And those things may not necessarily be congruent. And they also might not be congruent with the sex we were assigned at birth.
Okay, so I just looked up the gender unicorn. So the gender unicorn, the only thing that confuses me about this is why they choose a unicorn.
Because we're queer and we love unicorns.
Why?
That's a great question. Probably because they're magical and unique, and we think we are as well.
But that's fine. So the gender unicorn, I would suggest anyone Google it. So in all seriousness, all right, so there's the gender unicorn, okay. And the first one is gender identity, and that defines male, and then man, boy, female, woman, girl. So there are all these gender identities. So there's the gender, correct me if I'm wrong, the gender that you actually identify with. And then there's the gender expression,
right,
which can be masculine, feminine, or other. There's the sex assigned at birth, which can be male, female, or intersex. And then there's who you're physically attracted to, which is men or women or other genders.
Mm-hmm.
What would that be? What other genders would there be?
So all these kind of things we've been talking about under this trans umbrella, as far as which I guess we talked about off recording, but non-binary, two-spirit, agender, gender fluid, gender queer.
So is there another way to say that? Like they kind of just go back and forth between who they're attracted to or what their physical state?
Not necessarily. So if you look at it, you can see kind of like there's all these little arrows, and you can put kind of a marker on each one of these lines to give you a sense of where you are on the spectrum. So it's not just like a yes or no, it's a spectrum.
And then
you can kind of rank yourself.
And then you can be, okay, so there's who you're physically attracted to, mm-hmm. and then there's also who you're emotionally attracted to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So those can be very different, right? Some people may have pretty significant physical attraction to a person with a certain type of genitals, but maybe romantically interested in having a long-term partnership with someone with a different type of genitals.
So that seems like it would make a long-term relationship somewhat difficult.
It depends on all the people involved.
Sure.
So I think one of the other things we talk about a lot in queer culture is consent and how important consent is. And so I think a lot of times queer people, we already grow up outside of a lot of this traditional socially constructed roles for gender and roles for relationships. So it's almost like we have no directions or no guidebook. And so we have this opportunity to explore things and write our own story. And so we say, you know, as long as everyone's a consenting adult and, you know, no one's being disrespected or harmed, like what that relationship looks like is up to those people involved in it.
That's fair enough. I mean, that's a democratic way and fair way to do it.
Yeah.
I'm still looking at this gender unicorn. So I really recommend anyone look it up. So, all right. So we've gone through all the terms. Any other terms that you want to bring up?
Those would be the major terms, I think, okay. that kind of give people like a good starting point. I would also suggest if you're ever like talking to a queer person or someone who identifies as one of these terms, it's a really great idea to maybe ask them what they prefer to be called or what name they like to be called or what they would want you to call them and also what pronouns they use.
Now, I have a question about this. Can I just decide I want everyone to call me whatever name I want? And what if it changes from day to day? Because I feel like having it change from day to day.
I think if that was what you wanted and what felt congruent for you and your experience of yourself and your gender identity, then that's pretty awesome if people would respect that and respect. I also think every time people who have a gender identity that's not congruent with their sex assigned at birth, like every time we come out to someone, every time we tell someone what to call us, every time someone uses our name or uses pronouns, has the potential to be traumatic. So I don't think there are a whole lot of people who would be interested in changing their name every day just because they feel like it. I think when we're talking about being transgender or having gender dysphoria, we're talking about something that is very, very different than just like, I'm 7 years old and today I want to be called Chloe and tomorrow I want to be called Sam and Friday call me puppy and I'm going to bark at everything. You know, those are phases for a lot of people and they pass pretty quickly, right?
So I tend to be like fairly easygoing. So if someone wants to call me Chris or Fergie or Dr. Ferguson, or they can call me like whatever they want, like, hey, you, like whatever. So I tend to just not get bent out of shape about it. So what I'm trying to understand, and I think a lot of people that have that question, is if, say, someone's going through a gender reassignment and they say, hey, like, even though they look, say, physically masculine, they're saying, my name is Chloe. Mm-hmm. But sometimes people forget, or they'll say, hey, sir, and they'll say, no, I'm a woman. But people forget because they have 1,000 other things to keep track of. So I think if you could explain why that's such a sensitive issue, that would be helpful.
Well, I think, you know, for you, Chris, Fergie, Dr. Ferguson, those are all titles you feel comfortable with. And they're all things that feel congruent with how you identify yourself. Whereas for people within this trans umbrella, those words don't feel congruent with who we are as individuals. And so they actually tend to cause trauma when they're used. I think a lot of times, though, if you have kind intentions and you start out with the questions like, what would you like me to call you? What pronouns do you use? And then you do your best to remember as often as possible. And when you forget, you apologize. Like, I think in general, that's going to go a long way with pulling the trauma out of the situation. Because I think most of us recognize that we're all humans and change, no matter what kind of change it is challenging for us.
I can see that. So then to transition, what are some of the issues that, and you were saying that the term queer is the appropriate term. Like, that is not a negative term, but that's, I can use that term.
Yeah. So I think that term has really been reclaimed by the community and the culture. And oftentimes we really use it as like a catch-all phrase for everyone within our community. All of those letters we just tried to go through.
So queer is the umbrella term.
A lot of that is typically how I use it and how a lot of us use it. Yeah.
Okay. So what are some of the terms that queer people experience when they are seeking healthcare?
So, you know, there can be so many. I think, and we kind of talked about this off camera. I think a lot of times as a queer person walking into the doctor's office, like I have a pretty low bar. I really just want them to be not mean to me. And I don't actually really necessarily need them to be well educated in my specific healthcare needs, which is unfortunate. And so I actually grew up in North Florida and went to medical school in North Florida, which is a fairly conservative part of the country. And I always had concern going in to my healthcare providers, whether or not they would be mean to me because of the fact that I had partners with the same reproductive organs as I did, whether or not they would, because, you know, I had physicians offer to pray with me when I was a patient, which is just pray to a Christian God. And, you know, I think a lot of times as physicians, like, that's not necessarily our role.
It is interesting that you would face discrimination from physicians.
I think that really so much of this is really just moving into the topic, kind of commonplace cultural conversation. I can't remember the right wording for that, but where our culture at large is starting to discuss it. So we are getting all these new words and all these new ways to talk about it. And people are starting to have ways to describe feelings that they never knew how to describe before. And so I think exploring kind of what gender and what reproductive organs and what sex and gender expression, how that plays out in different other creatures, can potentially give us even more ways to consider things as humans that we might not have thought about before.
Well, with all of the different combinations of gender identity, gender expression, the sex you're assigned at birth, who you're physically attracted to, who you're emotionally attracted to, I think that can be a lot to get your head around. What might, and correct me if you think this analogy is appropriate, is back in the day, they used to think that left-handed people were somewhat abnormal and they should use their right hand because everyone uses their right hand. So they should really be only right-handed people. Mm-hmm. So they would teach these children to really use their right hand, and it just didn't go well. Like, it was just, it didn't work for anyone. And that's why now the teaching paradigm has switched to, if you're left-handed, just be left-handed. Like, that's how you were born. That's what makes you happy. You function better that way. Be that way. And if you take that as a microcosm to look at the larger picture of the macrocosm of all of these other things that can be different on a spectrum, for me, that helps it to make sense.
I think that helps a lot of people, especially because so often we talk about it as you're left-handed or you're right-handed. And there are
some people are both.
Right? There are so many people who are both. And there's some people who are both equally. And then there are some people who are like, I like to use scissors with my left hand. I like to swing a bat with my right hand. I like to write with a pencil with my left hand, right? So it depends on the activity.
And I think, yes.
Exactly. It speaks to the spectrum as opposed to this binary yes or no.
So what are some of the other healthcare related issues that queer people would have when they're seeking healthcare?
I'm super glad you're trying to help people advocate for themselves. I think sometimes as physicians, we forget how challenging that can be because people have to take time off work to come see us. They then have to either pay a copay or a co-insurance payment to see us. And then if they didn't like us, they have to do all of that again to see someone new, right? And that can, unfortunately, if you keep running into a bunch of assholes, that can cost a lot of money and a lot of time and a lot of emotional energy.
Well, unfortunately, you get what you pay for. Like, if you really want good healthcare, you should interview or get recommendations, and you can do it cheaper. Like, you can just talk to a lot of people and see who are people recommending to see in healthcare.
Right. And that's a great way to do it. There's the advent of social media has definitely made that a very different experience, right? People used to just have to do it by word of mouth. And now you can kind of go on Facebook groups that are specific to areas that are LGBTQ or trans focused that kind of can help guide you in some of those decisions.
The caveat being, though, if you're trying to figure out who to see, typically happy people do not post online. Typically only unhappy people post online.
So I personally, we're derailing quickly here. I have strong feelings about online reviews, and I'm not going to talk about them. I would actually say the better way to vet providers, healthcare providers, is to ask other queer people through like Facebook groups or other social media groups. There's also a couple organizations that list LGBTQ friendly and competent providers that you can go to and find some in your area. But I think the better, instead of just reading reviews, maybe the better thing to do is I live in Seattle and I practice telemedicine. So I actually see people throughout the state of Washington. So there's a few different organizations. Like there's Queers of the South Sound. So that's kind of the Olympia area. Like that's a Facebook group. And I could go on there and post and be like, hey, I'm looking for a doctor who has some recommendations, right? And I think you get a lot more positive feedback that way as opposed to just negative reviews.
I 100% agree with you. So yeah. Circling back to what are some of the other than their doctors mean to them?
So discrimination, actually, unfortunately, LGBTQ people, particularly trans people of color, have experienced actual like assault by providers at times, which is horrible. You know, and sometimes that assault looks like kind of, I would think we would both think weird as doctors. Like they'll go in with a cold and a doctor will ask to do a genital exam and it's just like totally not relevant to the issue.
Technically speaking, I think like people have lost their licenses for doing things like that.
Right, exactly. You know,
it's not medically indicated.
It's not medically indicated, but patients might not know that, right?
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. And as like, we talk more and more about these kinds of things and the internet connects people. I think more and more people are getting education and exposure to like, no, that is not what my doctor's visit should be like, right? Because it's not like, you know, we would expect to do a pelvic exam on a diabetic who's there for their blood sugar control. I don't know why we would expect to do that for a transgender patient who's there for a totally unrelated issue.
Well, I think that's good that you're bringing that up, like reasonable expectations of what your doctor should and should not be doing. And I 100% agree. I have no idea like why you would do that and why would you want to do that? Because it's not relevant.
Right. I can't speak to kind of what's going on in those people's minds. But I think we both agree it's inappropriate. And I think it's important to remember if you ever have questions or concerns about what your physician is doing, you have the right over your own body and you can say no. And then you can go talk to other people and see were they actually violating your rights and should they be reported.
You can just ask them, why are you doing this thing?
You can, if you feel safe enough doing that.
If you feel like your doctor or NP or PA is doing something odd, I think it's fair to just ask them, hey, why are you doing this thing? And if they're a good person or provider, doctor, nurse, whatever, the appropriate response is they'll just tell you, this is why I'm doing this thing.
I think that's great advice. I come from a place in a community where our trauma rates are higher than within our cisgendered peer population. And so I think asking if you feel safe is a great option. I think just saying no and leaving is also an okay option as well. Doctors are humans too. And some of us have, we all have biases and we all have judgments and we all have discrimination. And unfortunately, sexual orientation and gender identity are topics that really evoke strong feelings in a lot of people. And so sometimes that leads to assault and even death for trans people or for queer people. And so I would always say prioritize your safety first. And sometimes that means giving people the benefit of the doubt. And sometimes it means just leaving.
And I think that's very valid advice as well.
Yeah, but I would say, so that happens. Unfortunately, assault by providers is a thing, maybe a less intense form of challenges we experience a lot of times when we walk into a doctor's office. We might sit down and all of the resources in the waiting room might be directed towards cisgender heterosexual people. So they don't necessarily speak to any of our health concerns or issues. And it doesn't create an environment where I necessarily feel like I can ask about those things. And then for trans people, or all of us, we get the forms, the intake forms from the doctor, and it says gender, male, female, right? And there's just not even boxes for us to check that are appropriate for who we are. And then we kind of talked about people using our names and using our pronouns. And then, we get into this point where we're finally back there with our healthcare provider and they don't really know anything about our healthcare specific needs, so they might not have ever done gender affirming hormone therapy for a person who's in transition. They might not know how to do that, might not feel comfortable how to do that. They might ask their patient to educate them on how to do that, which as for cisgender people, I think a lot of times they go to their doctor expecting, kind of expert medical advice. And a lot of times transgender people go to their doctor with a whole bunch of research in their hands to show their doctor, this is how people are doing it. Can we do this? And I think that's just, an unfortunate situation.
What specialty is really critical for, say someone is a woman, but then they transition to a man, they still need to be screened for all the standard woman-related healthcare screening things?
Yeah. And so a lot of times, Chris, when I'm talking about this, I don't necessarily say they were a woman or they were a man, because this person might have always identified as the gender that's different than, kind of the organs they were born with. So they were always a man or a woman. And they're just starting to bring their expression congruent with their identity. And you're right, we may transition and use hormones and other interventions to change our appearance to look more congruent with the gender we experience ourselves as, but our healthcare should still manage all of the reproductive organs and genitals we have and other potential preventative healthcare risks that come along with those things.
What specialty should people seek out to really maximize their healthcare?
Well, I am trained as a family medicine physician, so I kind of feel like everyone should have a great primary care provider. And there's a few different guidelines as physicians that are created for gender affirming care. So there's WPATH, the Endocrine Society, and the UCSF, University of California at San Francisco, all have kind of guidelines that we can use to follow and kind of create a standard of care with. They all say that can be done by multiple different types of providers. So it can be done by primary care providers. It can be done by nurse practitioners and PAs. And then it can be done by endocrinologists, internal medicine doctors, and naturopaths, just to name a few. Basically, anyone who feels like they can meet those standard of care and that they have spent the time developing the knowledge and the skill set that they need to provide that kind of care.
Okay. So what are some of the things that you feel like healthcare workers or the general public should know or understand about queer culture?
I think, one of the most important things is, I think we've kind of talked about this off tape, but is to be kind to each other and to not make assumptions about each other based on clothes or anything else. And maybe just to approach each other with open minds and and ask inquisitive questions about names, pronouns. You know, I think it was pretty common being from the South, like as a medical student, I can't even remember how many times my patients asked me if I had a husband yet. and then always kind of just deflecting that question because I didn't feel like it was relevant to their care, nor did I feel like talking about myself was why they were there, right? But kind of those kind of assumptions box us in and keep us from having these conversations about all these terms and really experiencing ourselves as unique individuals who have the capacity to write our own stories.
And I think that's well said. And that's probably a thought that you can extend to all people, regardless of culture or birth of country of origin, et cetera, is just be nice to people and be respectful and don't be an asshole.
Don't be an asshole. And I would say the other thing is like when you're not sure, you're confused or you have questions, it's really great if you can ask those questions first, right? Because I think what happens to a lot of minority groups, whether they're sexual orientation minorities, gender identity minorities, people of color, whatever the minority is like people, they're like, oh my God, I have a question about how do you do your hair for people of color or something like that. And it's like, it's not my job to teach you how to do that. You know, and we have this amazing thing called the internet and you can look it up. Like I have, you know, 72 other things to do with my day that don't involve educating you about how I take care of my hair. You know, that's kind of one of the common ones I hear coming from people of color.
I can see that. Fair enough. So if people want to get in touch with you or have questions, because since you do telemedicine in the state of Washington, you said?
Yes, Washington.
Yes. How can people get in touch with you or what social media contacts do you have?
Fabulous. So I have a website, queerdoc.com. And then my social media handles are the same. On Facebook, Twitter. I'm also on Instagram. And you can also, I think, just Google like queer doctor online. And I think eventually I show up.
Fantastic. So all those links will be included in the show notes. So again, Crystal, thank you very much for taking the time to answer all these questions.
Thank you for having me, Chris.
No, you're welcome. And again, I would encourage anyone to look up The Gender Unicorn. It's actually like, I think it breaks it down and explains it with all the different options.
Yeah, totally.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave a comment on the Get Healthy 360 Facebook page and consider subscribing to this podcast. Thanks.